Hello and welcome to the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast. I'm Kathy Love. I started life as an OT, had an amazing, crazy private practice which I sold. And what I do now is help allied health business owners create a business that serves them, the time, the money, the joy that they absolutely deserve. And this is where my idea for the podcast started. What I want to do is to capture how hard allied health business owners in Australia work to achieve their dreams, to support their teams, to create amazing outcomes for their clients. So sit back, beverage of choice, drive safely, walk carefully, however you're listening in, and I hope you absolutely enjoy. Hello, everybody. Kathy Love here and settling in for another amazing conversation with Michael Kerr. Michael is the founding director of Kerr Capital, and he is our go-to person for all things business valuation. Welcome, Michael.
Thanks, Kathy.
Really, and nice we're sitting here. Oh, yeah, we're sitting here commenting about the Arctic conditions in which we're experiencing. So good to have you.
Yeah, no, really nice to be on. Thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah, you are very, very welcome. So, Michael, can you take us back a bit in your professional background and sort of help us understand how you got to this role of valuing businesses?
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, the career goes back, you know, well more than 20 years that I've had Kerr Capital. It involved time in lending money for one of the big banks to small businesses. And so we're always focusing on, you know, what's the cash flow coming out of a business so we can get our money back as a bank. I worked in accounting, you know, advising owners on minimizing tax. I did actually work in a couple of small businesses, including a startup. So, I started Kerr Capital in early 2001 as a traditional business broking business, so helping owners to prepare and then sell. It's a pretty rough and ready market, and I just wanted to do it differently and better. So I started to, help to try to understand what makes a business tick. What do the numbers in the business tell me about the performance? Where does that lead in terms of how much might it be worth to a potential third party like a buyer? But also what's the true return to an owner if they keep the business? So it's all of that is underpinned by understanding the financials in a business, and ultimately then, you know, what's the value of the business? So that's, you know, and I'm deeply curious and fascinated by, you know, why businesses started, why owners started businesses, or sometimes why they bought a business. And, you know, what do the numbers say? Is it producing a profit or producing a return that's, you know, satisfactory? And then mostly, what does that translate to in terms of a value if they were to sell it to a third party, or sell it to staff, or sell it to anybody? But the value, you know, a lot of the work I do is also owners just saying, what is it worth? I'm not sure if I want to sell. I'm not sure what I want to do, but I would like to know if it's worth something. So, you know, I haven't actually checked for a long time, but I imagine on Google, what's my business worth is a pretty popular search term.
Yeah, I haven't looked at it either. But I think that's a good place to kind of explore a little further. What I've sort of observed over the while, that business owners don't think they have a business that's big enough to warrant getting valued. I also, my business heart breaks a little bit when I hear things like, well, who would even want to buy it as well? And I guess there's also just fear that kind of underpins both of them about, oh, look, I'll just limp along until I've really got to make a tough decision about which way it's going to go. And so there's this hesitation, which I can understand.
Yeah. Well, I'm better, put my head down and, I'll worry about it later. If I'm fearing that it's maybe not as, valuable as I thought, it's easy to run for the covers and, but it looks, in terms of, value, it's probably worth, I have a philosophy about, valuing businesses and, firstly, valuations are, are professional opinions. So there's a lot of, there is this sort of leap to, I got a valuation, therefore it is worth what the valuation says. And it's a professional opinion. Mm-hmm. And, if you read into the detail of, of a really, thorough evaluation, it's loaded with, which it has to be because you're forecasting the future, so it's loaded with assumptions and disclaimers, and ultimately it's a professional opinion, and some are much better than others, and a lot of it depends also on why you can do a valuation for all sorts of different reasons and have different outcomes. So so keep in mind they are professional opinions. Even when there's a lot of different methodologies for valuing a business. A lot of them that I think, are understood more generally and more easily by everybody is, it's a valuation based on a multiple of earnings, which is, we can talk about why and where, small businesses fit, which is kind of a multiple of between zero and five times the earnings, but, two parts of evaluation for most, a multiple, that the number of years of profits that somebody would pay for your business, times some earnings base, and or net profit. Lots of terminology, but essentially someone will say the business is making $100,000 as the earnings base, and I'm going to, I think it's worth a multiple of three, or I'd pay 3 years worth of that 100,000. So the business is worth 300,000. That's kind of like
bare bones valuation. Bare bones,
yeah. And then, but there are different methodologies, but that's fundamentally, it's an investment, right?
A disclaimer right there, Michael, that may or may not apply to anyone listening.
Yeah. And, but it's kind of like, somebody valuing, say, you're going to buy an asset and you're going to get a return out of it. And so it's a broad brush, and that's kind of so, but as I said earlier, it's a, if you get a valuation, it's a professional opinion.
Yep.
If you're getting it to, to sell the business because someone's knocked on the door and said, we want to, make an offer to buy your business, what do you want for it? That's one example of a use. Another example is, I'm not sure what I want to do, but I want to, if I did think about selling, what's it worth? But in many cases, they're going to come back to that kind of multiple times earnings. Where it gets really, it's never straightforward because most small businesses, as a general rule of thumb, would be worth somewhere between zero and five times the earnings. And why is it between zero and five? I mean, if you look at, it's all about how risky small businesses are. If you thought about a bank deposit where you get 2%, you put $100 in, you get 2% a year. That's you've paid a multiple of 50 there. So in paying a really extreme multiple like that, you're saying it's extremely risk-free. So, that's an, bizarre example. But, you can think of it that way.
Yeah.
You get a very low return on your investment, but it's very secure. It equates to, if it was a 2% interest rate and you put $100 in, you've paid 50 times the $2 to get it. So you come back, listed businesses multiples more like 8, 10, 12, 15, small businesses 0 to 5. So that's why, as an investment, it's at the much riskier end. And that's why the multiples are way lower than a share.
And that's also why that if you do Google what is my business worth and you do pick the multiple and check your profit and loss and you do the math, that you don't necessarily dash out and sell the sheep station on that Google advice either.
No, you don't. Any of these discussions around value is going to end up in a negotiation. You can't just kind of land, if you just land a valuation on someone's desk and say, well, it says $747,300
and you're for sale. Yep.
Yeah. So that's, the other, I guess key parts of it, with a valuation, getting it valued, you've got to, accept that's your professional or your advisor's professional view. The other side will have a view. So they're open to negotiation always, but it is certainly a very strong basis on which to start thinking about, do I have a business of any value? And to your earlier, to go right back. So people think their business is too small. Or just aren't sure. There's fundamentally, it's part of the philosophy that every business has a value to somebody else. And it might be that it's got quite modest value. It may not make any money, any true profit. And we can talk about how to, we talked about the multiples, but we can talk about the art and science of, what is your actual net profit? Like that's, it's pretty complex and, every business, has some, will have, some value to somebody else. They may not be buying it for profit. They might, just say, look, a lot of them, you're buying another job. You're buying someone's job.
Yep.
And that is legitimate if that's what that's what you want. So, There's probably some level where it's, it's so tiny that, it's going to be hard. But, if you're in practice in your industry and you're a sole practitioner and you think about it more like you're selling your job to somebody else, and that's, it's got some value.
Yeah. And opportunity as well.
Gather around, dear listeners, for a moment of sheer audio delight. You may have heard, but we'd love to chat with Allied Health business owners. We get inspired hearing about your aspirations, the challenges you face, the roadblocks that get in your way, and business realities. So we invite you to book a free power call with a Naker Consulting business specialist, regardless of where you're at in business. Maybe you're feeling overwhelmed or overworked or overjoyed. We're here for you, and we'll meet you exactly where you are, judgment-free. It's okay to book a second or even a third call. We're always keen to hear all your news. Book a free power call with us today at naker.com.au/free-power-call. Let's get the convo ball rolling. Now it's time to get back to our regularly scheduled banter.
If only there was some training out there to make my practice manager shine like the keystone that my practice manager should be. Sure, there's a certificate here and there, but there isn't an academy that practice managers can attend to upskill, enhance, and refine their role to make them feel confident and capable of running a practice and leading a team. Oh wait, but there is. NACAR Consulting has created an academy tailored to the evolving practice manager role to ensure that they are excelling in their career and bring the most potential to their role. What does this mean for you, the Allied Health business owner? You can finally take your foot off the pedal and fully embark on your CEO journey. The role of your practice manager is to be your right hand, but if they don't have the skills to confidently manage their workload and the ever-changing climate, then you somehow have to always keep one eye open. Not anymore. In just 12 weeks, your practice manager can sharpen their toolkit and learn from the best to ensure that they can manage their role with flying colours. Spots will fill fast, and if you want to join this intake and get your practice managers up to scratch so that you can drink your morning cup of coffee without wondering, there's got to be an easier way, ever again, register via the show notes today.
So the main reasons people come to you to get their business valued is they want to know what they're worth. They may have had an offer. They might be thinking about the exiting transition process. They may be wanting lending Any other reasons?
No. I think they're all, you know, the you know, maybe the percentage of owners that come along and say, look, I'm interested in a long-term exit plan. I want to know what it's worth today is probably quite small. Most of the triggers for getting a valuation are things like, as you said, somebody knocked on the door and said, we want to buy your business. You know, what do you want? Or there's a, you know, often happens. It could be a, you know, a family or an illness related thing, you know. So there, they're the kind of key reasons, more unplanned than anything else. What I'd like to see more of is, you know, is that sort of regular review of, you know, I'm in the trenches working hard at my business. Yeah. You know, I'm taking some wages out of it, but, you know, is it worth something? Or, an appraisal of the business really gives you, you know, whether you're selling or not, a really
good reality check.
Good reality check. And a basis to say, look, if it's done well, it really kind of it starts to unpick your business numbers a bit. And you say, well, where can I grow profit? How do I increase, you know, the bottom line? And
where do I strengthen?
And that's, you know, typically, if you look at the normal tax return financial information, it's all, you know, a lot of it's done to minimize tax. And the way it's presented, I'd guess a lot of people listening to the podcast would probably kind of almost wash over, you know, the standard financial statements, because they're just a bunch of numbers. There's no real comparisons and
always room for improvement on that front. It's something that delights me and my team, is when we see that financial fitness getting stronger and stronger and stronger. It's exciting things. Business is, I guess, all about the numbers. And so there's some you need to, you know, have a lot more depth and understanding of than others.
Yeah, I think it, you know, in particularly in your industry, it is, you know, the output is is finances, and the output is great, you know, client outcomes, and you know, a lot of people are in business for, you know, for a combination of reasons, but you know, I do see that another check on, you know, whether it's meeting your own personal objectives is to say, you know, if I did, you know, I've got a house, maybe I've got, you know, other investments, but your business can be a really good investment. It can be a lifestyle thing where you take wages, but whatever, you know, it's, I don't think there's many owners that don't think at some point, you know, what is it worth? And so those, you know, the metrics, you know, so, you know, in performing a valuation, we always start with the raw tax numbers, and we always make adjustments. You know, this process of saying, you have a car running through the business, have all these expenses that wouldn't be there if you were, or don't have to be there. They're legitimately there because but they don't have to be there. If you're looking at this as a pure, somebody else is just saying, I just want to run the business as lean. And instead of having an expensive car, you have the, you know, most basic model of, you know, car, because that's all you really need to run the business.
Yep.
The business is, you know, providing you that benefit. But it, you know, from an investment point of view, it's probably understating the profits a bit, because you're, you know, paying for extra for a car that you don't really need.
Yeah.
So that process of adjustments, people get freaked out, but 99% of businesses, private businesses, will have some degree of, you know, those sort of discretionary things, which is why, you know, you're in business.
Why you're self-employed and shouldering the risk. Yeah, yeah. Before we get into the art and science and of how you work with business owners to arrive at the valuation, I want to throw in another question. And I don't think I've ever asked you this, but what are your thoughts on, I'm just going to Stephen Covey and this concept of start as you mean to proceed. So there's been more startups coming into the allied health disability sector than ever before, particularly in the last 6 or 7 months. What do you think about this, about having the exit or having the exiting phase somewhat front and center in your business development and growth plans?
Look, I think it's a wonderful thing to have a high level understanding of how you would exit a business for whatever reason.
Yeah.
So no question that, you know, if you start a project to, I don't know, polish the stairs or something, you know, you kind of know what it looks like, you know.
What done looks like, yeah. You know,
I don't have any problem with, I think it's a real positive to have a view. What it does, it takes some real vision. It takes commitment. I have over the years come across, some entrepreneurs who have built to sell. There's a book, right? I think it's John.
It's several. Yeah.
Yeah. And they were entrepreneurs who, the ones I've met, hasn't been, you know, tons, but there's been enough to see the model. And they came out of an industry. They might have already started and sold in that industry, and they see the opportunity to do it again. So they kind of know exactly who's going to take them out. And they've got such deep, industry experience that it's fascinating, right? They just go, you know, XYZ company is going to take us out in 3 years, and we know which customers they're going to want.
Yeah, so, let's cook the cake for them.
Cook, yeah. So yes, if you can do that, and whether or not you end up exiting is kind of not the most important thing as well, because if you are focused on an exit at some point, it gives you so much understanding of your business along the way and so much direction. If you are taking time to think about the long-term value, long-term sale, it means you might be making some investments ahead of the curve. So your business is going to be set up. So just pretend you did all that work and there's in for whatever reason an exit wasn't possible. I'd pretty much, you know, bank that the business is going to be better performing for the owner. So
yep.
What's wrong with that?
Yeah.
So you're definitely but to do it in practice takes, you know, investment of time, energy, and money.
Yeah. Let's also put in a little bit of conversation about what exit may look like. I think traditionally we tend to think that it's selling and waltzing away with our pockets bulging. It doesn't have to be like that. Would you like to run us through some of the options of exit? This is why I call it exiting or transitioning.
I think I understood, but if I'm wrong, just I'll shoot.
I'll improve my question. Yeah, no. You start and I'll improve my question. Go for it.
Yeah. So this, for me, the idea of an exit, it can also be limiting. It sort of, it predisposes that you're going to sell the business. You know?
Exactly. Yeah.
And for me, that is an exit, but, you know, I wouldn't do exit planning, if you want to call it that, just, you know, because the chances that all that stuff goes perfectly to plan and you sell to, you know, in 7 years' time to, you know, one of these three companies is, you know, it's pretty remote. Like,
yeah.
So there'd be an exit to other buyers. Might be staff buyouts or something that is just, you know, growing and growing where, you know, the internal transfers of a business. So that's a different kind of exit. For all that planning, the exit might appear way earlier than you thought so you've got to be ready for that. You can't, you know, you've built a 5-year plan and all of a sudden 2 years out, 2 years in, someone knocked on the door. So timing so hard to predict. So
yeah,
that's, you know, in terms of, you know, definition of an exit at a time, it's, this is well before then. I think one of the other really, why I think the word exit's kind of limiting is because it implies, you know, that you're going to sell the business. So a lot of, I think potential to phase out of it, you know, phase out of a business over time. So you stay, maybe you stay a shareholder and you exit, in terms of your day-to-day involvement in the business. You might exit as the, you know, operational person over time, but keep all of the business or some of the business. Mm. So there's an exit where, you know, it is an exit, but of you as the owner, as an operator, or as a practice manager, you know, whatever you do day to day in the business, you're doing less and less of that. And if you can successfully achieve that kind of exit, that's a much better return you're going to get putting your money in.
Well, potentially, yeah, adding, reclaiming your time and lifestyle, and potentially increasing the value of your business because you're proving that it can run with less of your input.
Yeah, and that's, you know, one of the key, you know, we go back to that, you know, discussion on multiples, and one, you know, where a buyer says, you know, what value you want, you're going to go to, how much, you know, the multiple and the earnings base. But a higher multiple where the business is less dependent on the owner. And perversely, if you play that out, if you are an owner that has a business that's not very dependent on you, why would you sell if it's making money
and doing what you need it to do? Yeah.
Yeah. They're the kind of, you know, limitations on the the terminology of exit. But, I think we're both, you know, strongly agree that the process to think about it is incredibly valuable.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's jump from there and, Michael, if you could explain a bit about the process of getting started and doing the work and the meetings and working with you to arrive at a valuation.
Sure. If one of those trigger events has happened and the valuation, you know, it starts with, whether it's me or anybody else, it's going to start with a review of, you know, the finances to try to establish what the bottom line profit is. And this, you know, so any valuation's premised on, you know, the historical performance of the business. And then you say, the historical performance is an indicator of future performance. So you've got to get your tax returns and financial statements for probably 3 or 4 years. And then there's, you know, go through that process of, you know, a whole lot of questions about why, you know, what drives these numbers. This is how I then approach it. Like every valuer, sometimes there are evaluations just because there's a, you know, family breakup and, you know, they just go, you know, they have a different reason for valuing. So they just maybe kind of just short circuit it and do, you know, take a different approach. But, you know, the work I'm doing with owners is to maximize the value of their business. So, you know, the valuation by nature can, you know, it's got to be premised or based on the historical performance. And that's sort of the science bit of it. The art bit of it is, okay, the business, you know, it's made $100,000 net profit 5 years running. The future looks like $100,000 of net profit. So whether you take last year or an average of 5 years, you're going to get $100,000 as the sort of earnings base. If it's gone 50, 500, 250, 100, That's when the art is, well, which one do you average it? Do you, do you take 1 year only? And because it's, you know, it's an indicator, you know, it's, you look at the history to kind of forecast the future, then that's when you start to dig around. So what happened the year you made 500 and the year you made 50? Has anything changed there? You know, what was there a one-off thing? So that's, you know, so there's a lot of, you know, when I work with business owners, it's like digging down on, you know, why things happened, and therefore, is it likely to keep happening negatively or positively? So raw numbers turn into a whole bunch of questions about, why is that like that? You know, did you increase your prices? So it's when you really get, you know, under the covers and really, you know, understand how the business works, and therefore, you know, where it might head in a profit sense or a sales sense, and, you know, where the value of the business might be. And then, you know, then if you establish that earning space, then you've got the other piece of art is to say, is it 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you know, as a multiple of earnings? You know, if that's, and, you know, it's the difference between 2 and 3, it's kind of like you can look and look around and see what other businesses may have sold for, but that's fraught. You know, it's hard to get that data. Yeah. But if the business was making 500,000 and you go with a multiple of 2 versus a multiple of 3, it's $500,000 difference.
Difference, yeah.
And, you know, who decides 2 versus 3? So it's why, you know, those, you know, that's, you know, the process. So, you know, and you get better at, you get a better outcome if you deeply understand what drives the numbers, as well as just formatting the numbers and saying, you know, these are what they are.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where, you know, it leads to advice on, we should do this. And, if you were, to want to sell the business or you got approached, you know, this is kind of a guideline valuation you could give them. And this is how you know, you've got to defend if you're asking for a higher price.
Yeah.
You've got to defend that number. And you do that by saying, well, look, got all these growth opportunities and staff are really settled and I'm not so. And that's when, you know, the valuation turns into a negotiation, which, you know, which it should, because you've got to argue your case and they've got to argue theirs.
Yeah. That speaks to something I was thinking about as I was listening to you, and that is about the learnings that the business owners have during the process of getting their businesses valued with a consultant like your good self.
Yeah, it's remarkable. You know, in terms of, I think in a lot of cases, owners are incredibly busy. They've got a, you know, decent accountant or a really good accountant, and a lot of it's about minimizing tax. You know, which is, I'm not being critical. That's just,
that's all part of it. Yeah. You want that.
And then there's all these, you know, other bits of compliance every month, quarter, and owners just go like, I've got to get that done. So the learnings come for me. It's pretty straightforward. I put 4 or 5 years of financial performance straight out of tax returns onto one Excel sheet, line them up side by side. And that's, you know, often the first time that, you know, you might say, look, sales have grown, you know.
Yeah, you get 5%. To see the patterns.
See the patterns.
And
then the other simple, it's not a hack, it's just, you know, I always laugh, you know, with it, every set of accounts goes from A to Z, you know? Admin fees, accounting fees, you know, salaries, you know, A to Z. And their numbers are all over the shop. So I just put them on one sheet and then average all of those expenses and then reorder them from highest to lowest. So when you're looking at this one page, one sheet, you're seeing, you know, and no surprise, you go, wages are the biggest expense, rent the second, typically. And if you do it as a percentage of sales, you realize, well, if I'm really going to fundamentally change this business, there's 50 line items and there's about three that are really drivers. And owners, they go, well, I've never really looked at it like that. And it does pose questions and what ifs. And so, you go through that analysis with them and it draws out good questions and sometimes good answers and sometimes, well, I need to think about that. Because it just gets caught up in the day-to-day or the compliance regime of just getting stuff done rather than reflecting on, what's actually going on? Is it increasing? Is it growing? Is it getting more efficient? There's nothing like it's not rocket science. It's just some basic ratios and some basic analysis. So those two things often spark some really fundamental questions about why am I in business and what do I need to do to make it different.
It comes back to the time, doesn't it? And that focus as a business owner that you're doing enough of the things, enough of the time to keep the numbers good enough. There's a lot of good enough, I think, in business. And when you get into consultation with advisors like yourself, business coaches, accountants who have a broader, more functional approach, you get to start to play with the data sets and you get to look backwards more and see those comparisons. But in working with someone like you and when we were valuing my business, whilst the details aren't relevant, I love the process. The process was really interesting to have someone who doesn't know me, doesn't know the business, get in and look at what the numbers mean and look at what the numbers mean within the context of the work we do in the industry we're in as well. And the numbers kind of represent a bit of a finish line, but how did you get the numbers? And why is that number like that? And does that mean this? And what's your service delivery model? And where's that funding coming from? And, the questions help you understand the numbers very, very differently, but very quickly as well.
Yeah, look, I think if you're and this is where, there is a distinction, I like to draw between a valuation and a valuation-based
discovery process.
Discovery and advice on where to go. The straight valuation has its place and its purpose, but, there's a much, as we did, a much broader. And I think, the key to that is, you've got to be curious about what drives the numbers, and you've got to be open to saying, I'd never thought of it. And you say, you don't have time, but I think if you're going to exit plan in the broader sense that we've talked about, you need to, it kind of goes back to the numbers and starts with the numbers. And if you don't know how those numbers look to an external advisor, and more importantly, and I always take the, look through the eyes of a potential investor.
Yeah, yeah.
Whether you like it or not, that's how they're going to see it. And if you're making the biggest adjustment in a lot of the small businesses is whatever you decide to, salaries is always the biggest expense. And most owners don't pay themselves they take drawings and all sorts of stuff, but they don't, through the profit and loss, actually take what would be a wage they would happily accept if they were working for somebody else, so like a commercial wage. Their accountant might say, take more out because you're just going to pay tax, or sometimes there's not enough and they pay themselves a really low wage. It's always the biggest adjustment. But for an investor who was, or somebody else, what you as the owner do in the business, that has to be replaced with somebody. And they're going to have to pay a commercial wage. And because you choose to go up and down from that for whatever reasons is, you know, kind of when it comes to valuing it for a third party, it's irrelevant.
Yep.
It's legitimate that you do that, but it is where, you know, you get owners realizing that, you know, they have these, you know, maybe I'm doing better than I thought, or maybe I'm paying everybody else, but I'm not really, if I was to get a job and I was, you know, I was worth $125,000 a year as a practitioner, and I'm only consistently only drawing 30 because I'm thinking it'll get better or get, you know, get different. Mm. That's
a bit of a wake up call.
Yeah, and yeah, it is a wake up call, and it's probably a hard one, but you know that's why you kind of you do need external perspective. But look, there are owners want to chug along. That's fine. But if you know, if you are in the back of your mind thinking, am I really? This is, you know, one of the other reasons for evaluation. Am I really getting the return out of the business I want? Forget about anybody else.
Yeah,
and it does often lead to, well, I need to change things, and you know that's scary but exciting. But you know, if you got to have that kind of measurement of where you're tracking.
Yeah, and that courage to kind of hear how it is, and that willingness to be able to then roll your sleeves up and make the changes that you probably already knew, but now you see the data. Rarely are there surprises.
That's right. And it's more a case of, you know, I think one of the, you know, what I've admired about the work you've done is that, you know, is the various ways you get your industry, you know, peers and colleagues and clients to, you know, come together and discuss things and ask questions. And it can be so lonely running a business, and it can be scary, and it can be uncertain, and to have somebody or a group, particularly of, you know, somebody who understands what you're going through, to, who can be, friend and foe, they can ask the hard questions. Like, you know, encouragement's great and keep going, you know, all that. But you also, you know, there's a place, and it's hard for owners to trust and to reach out and to know who to ask. But yeah, it's so important that you don't journey alone.
Yeah. Yep. And that you can put your hand up and ask for a bit of help with things at different times along the way. And over the years with the businesses that I've run, getting that help and that perspective and just lighting up the dark corners, even if I didn't want to look in them, has been absolutely, absolutely necessary.
Yeah. And which is why you've transitioned from practitioner to coach and, you know, advisor, and you know, bringing all of that experience to it. And I think it's there's always a way forward, whatever the challenge, you know, mostly the challenge you're finding. But yeah, you've got to, as you say, got to be open and shine a light on things. But if you want to keep kind of looking over, that's okay. As was, you know, maybe it's okay for you, but most people would say, look, let's deal with the issue rather than keep deferring dealing with it. And not having time is kind of like you got to find the time for these things.
We've all got the same amount.
We have. Priorities.
Use it differently. Speaking of time, we've got a few minutes left. Michael, do you want to perhaps bring a bit of a summary about when and why a business owner, in this case an allied health business owner, would reach out and engage and get their business valued? What are the key indicators there?
I think go back to why you're in business, and the business can produce a profit or a wage along the way, and a lot of businesses have the potential to have some, value when sold, whether it's to a third party or to staff. On what base, in what formula, doesn't really matter. There's, so there's two ways to get money out of the business. So, if you, a valuation, and not just a valuation, but a valuation and some kind of advice earlier rather than later, is a bit of an investment in then or now to do that. But, the process we talked about that we went through, it opens up, it kind of puts a few boundaries in place. If you were, most of the time I take I work on the basis, if you had to sell tomorrow, what would it be worth? And which we didn't really cover, but what's going to get, like, it can have some value, but you might have a bunch of things that are going to stop it selling because you've got some unsigned contracts. There are things that just get in the way. So let's not forget about all. So values, stand alone, but there are always other things you need to complete a transaction. So if you were to value it tomorrow, this is what it's worth. The earlier you do that, the more likely you are to, have that reality check, good, bad, or otherwise, and you're able to, to start to drive both of those returns, the profit you make out along the way, and potentially the value, if you were to sell somewhere down the track. You can plan, but you can never be. There's a whole lot of things that come from, these triggers that come from left field, time wise, health wise, industry conditions wise, where, something will come at you. And if you have a view on what your business is worth, it's, for that purpose, it's very helpful. So earlier rather than later, but don't just do it for, on the basis that it's going to, all work out in 7 years' time and you're going to sell for, this much. And, along the way, part of it, once your eyes are open a little bit, I encourage, the industry always knows better than any value or anybody else. So you've got to keep your eyes and ears open for what's going on in your industry. And that's often, it's probably the richest source of, information about what a business in an industry is worth. Things go on all the time. A lot of that data is not, information is not shared, but within an industry, you've got more chance of finding out than, from.
Yeah. Some, current market value.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you got to tune into what other businesses like you, bigger, smaller, are potentially selling for, because it's a pretty good, it's a guide. It's not gospel. Yeah. It's a guide, but, I think, they're the, takes a bit of time and effort and investment, but I think the returns, can be quite, powerful, profound, not just, and don't, as I said before, not, it's not just for selling. It's for improving your business and just having, it's like an insurance thing. If I did have to sell for whatever reason, or I chose to sell because something came along, then you've lined up your expectations with the buyer. Not an invasive process, but it's certainly, when I get involved, we kind of get down to, that level of what drives these things. And so it becomes more of a, how's your business work and, how can you make it better or different?
Yeah. I think discovery process is a great way to describe it. And it's invaluable to have an external perspective. Absolutely invaluable, because you're in it and running it and getting all the things done. But really important.
There's one other thing I think having been involved in a lot of transition sales of businesses, when I'm selling a business, most of the time I run an expression of interest process when selling. And the relevance of this I'll come to, but rather than you know, we all tend to think our business, you know, I got a valuer and I got some said the business is worth $1 million. And so I'm going to put $1,100,000, you know, and negotiate down to $1 million if they get to the point where they're actually selling. I run these processes, which frustrates the, you know, people no end, but not the eventual buyer. So we prepare the business in the same way. The owner and I have, we have to have an agreed understanding of what we're shooting for. But when we promote the business, we talk about all the, you know, the financial performance, but we don't put a headline sticker price in. It's really, and people, you know, potential, well, tie kickers. I just want to know what the price is. Well,
yeah.
If you're not prepared to put a bit of effort into understand the business and make an offer, I don't think you are really serious. The genuine buyers will play along, and what's deeply fascinating time and time again is that we did all the analysis and we thought somewhere between this number and that number, and they often come in lower than that, but they regularly come in higher than that as well, because we just don't know necessarily their reason for being interested in your business, and we can't, you know, you don't just assume all buyers are the same. I'm not trying to, you know, get people excited. There's always this sort of Tats Lotto kind of buyer out there who's going to pay.
But it's about positioning the value of the business.
It is, and you might be, you know, profitable, but there might be a bigger business who's not really interested in the you know, of course they're interested, but they're more interested in the quality team you have, and they go, well, if we had to compile a team like that in this tight labor market, we could spend 18 months, 2 years, and have to pay headhunters. I mean, you can see that sometimes they do the numbers and go, look, we'll pay more because it's just a quicker way to
solve. You're buying time. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, in their case, they might have a really, you know, bit important bit of IP that you haven't optimized yet, but they can roll it out to their existing customer base. So there's always, you've got to leave room. This is not valuation so much as selling tactics, that you've got to ask and say, why are you interested? Who are you? Have you bought before? And you see that, they often will mostly have a different view on value to them. With same bottom line, you know.
Yep.
You give
them
all the data, just don't give them the price.
Yep. Yeah. Pro tip. Leaving that one there. Michael, thank you so much for coming in and shining the light on the process that is getting your business valued. Very good.
No, it was great to chat, Kathy. Thanks for the invitation, and power to you for all the great work you do.
Look forward to
staying in touch.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Michael.
All the best.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. For the show notes and other resources, our webinar replays, they're all available over on naker.com.au. And if you're loving what you're listening to, please subscribe. We don't want you to miss out on a single thing. And if you want others to get the same benefit that you've had from listening into these episodes, please share this episode and any of the others forward to any of your other allied health business colleagues. And we are totally here for you. Don't forget for a moment that you can jump on in and book that power call, and we can see how we can help you get the best of business done. Looking forward to seeing you there.